From one islander to another, Isle of Wight Radio proudly presents John Hannam Meets.
Always a big thrill to meet Sheila Ferguson. Nice to see you again.
And nice to see you. To see you nice.
You're at the Mayflower Southampton in Dick Whittington from December 15 to January the 6th. Now, we first met in 1985 on the Isle of Wight when you came with the Three Degrees for that Sealink Song Festival. Do you remember?
Of course I do.
Yeah. Gerard Kenny, Jan Francis, Peter Powell, Sonny Curtis, Three Degrees.
Wow. Oh, how lovely. My God, we go back a long way.
We do. Yes. That was a nice event, though, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
I want to talk a wee bit about the Three Degrees. Did you have solo aspirations? When you joined the group, obviously it was great to be in a famous group, but did you ever have solo ambitions at that stage or not really?
Okay, at 14, I recorded my first single as Sheila Ferguson, and it did relatively well in the tri-state area. I was still in high school, and I had a crush on Marvin Gaye.
Yes.
So I thought, well, I can sing a little bit. My best shot at meeting him is to become a singer, and then I can meet Marvin Gaye. My first gig, at the age of 14, was at the Apollo Theater in Harlem. He was at the top of the bill, I was at the bottom of the bill. I went to his dressing room and knocked on the door to get his autograph, knees a shaking, and he was so lovely. He just said, come in and sit down. And I did, and he relaxed me, and we stayed friends all of my life. We had the same manager, the Three Degrees had the same manager as me. When one of the girls dropped out one weekend, they asked me to fill in because we were always together. I knew the choreography and all the harmonies, yada, yada, yada. And I stayed for 20 years. So I loved being in a group at that time. As time went on, I began to hate being in a group. I could never be in a group again. After being married to two women for 20 years, could kill anybody. So it has a shelf life. And yes, the Three Degrees are still going on their own, and they're doing whatever they're doing, and I wish them well. I've been on my own since 1987. I raised my twin daughters. They're happily married. I'm happily alone. I've moved back from Mallorca to England, and this is where I will spend the rest of my life. So I've kind of summed it up for you without answering any more questions. Da-da-da!
Well done! Well
taken. Yep. You, Sheila Ferguson, you were rather a gifted child, weren't you? You were quite clever, weren't you?
Yes, I was a straight-A student. And as a result of that, I used to get to the principal's office a lot and get extra active. I think they called it in the prefect in England. And at one point, I looked in the drawer, and there were some blank report cards. And I thought, ooh, I see something here. So I took a batch, and I started selling them to the kids for a fiver each. And, I mean, I was making some serious money. I know, I was making money. So my dad said to me one night, Sheila, well, what? When you hear that tone, you know you're in trouble.
Yeah.
You need to go out. I need to go up to the school with you. So I'm swearing this about the report card. So on the way to school, we're in the car. And when your father has to take off work, you know you're in trouble for a long time. So on the way up, I thought, Dad, I got to tell you what I did. And I told him about it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we get up to the school, and the principal says, so, why are you not coming to physical ed at 8 o'clock every morning? I said, well, I was cutting class because it was cold, and I didn't want to be getting my clothes off to get into a gym costume to go do phys ed. So I was cutting out the class. I figured, I'm a scholastic. I don't need to have all this rubbish. So, and I thought, no, this is all you wanted? Yes, we want to know why you're cutting class. You're number one in the school. Why are you cutting class? I'm sorry, I won't cut class again. Shall we go? And my dad, you got something else to say? I thought, ugh. So I kind of cooked my own goose.
You wanted to be a psychologist, didn't you?
I still am going to.
Are you?
Now that I'm back in England, I'm going to scale down the amount of gigs I do, a lot more TV and stuff like the Marigold. I've just done two spin-offs, one in Russia, one in Argentina. And the other TV shows I can't mention. And I'm going to enroll in some university to get my psychology degree.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Just briefly about the Three Degrees, obviously so many hits, didn't you? And mm-hmm. you sang the lead on When Will I See You Again, mm-hmm. and fantastic. You once told me, Sheila, that you sort of had world fame almost before you were famous in America, because you, when you were at the height of your fame, you weren't in America, were you?
No, without going into too much detail, we were more popular in Europe and Japan than in America. America, out of, when was it number one in every country in the world? America was the last country to make it number one. I don't think they were ready for three black women to be that pop yet. They took the Supremes and they figured, well, that was enough. You know, they're not going to get any more. You can only have one at a time. It was funny because I was talking to Cleavon Little, who was in Blazing Saddles once in L.A., in Beverly Hills, and I asked him, I said, "What after Blazing Saddles, why didn't you do more?" He said, "Sheila, everywhere I went, it was Richard Pryor. And everywhere we went, there were the Supremes." So there's always things that the public are not comfortable hearing, and I'm very comfortable in saying, because there's a fantasy about show business that I try to explain to people. We're still people too. We have families. Why did you leave the 3 Degrees? You should be doing this. I can't live their fantasy for them. I need my own. And my choice was to leave the group to raise my children. They're happy. They're married. I'm happy. I let their husbands think I approve when I, you know. And, you know, so I feel like I've fulfilled myself as a woman and as a mom. I was there for the school runs, not schlepping around the world at 3 Degrees. So I'm happy.
Land of Hope and Gloria.
Wow, you've done your homework. Yep, first American ever, or only American, and first black woman to star in her own sitcom. Ta-da! I just came watching TV, and I thought, there needs to be more black folks on TV. This is the late 80s. And I thought I was the perfect person to do a crossover, because I had the royal family thing and Prince Charles on one hand and all that on the other. And I thought they would take to it. And my idol was Joan Sanderson. She just was the octogenarian person against me in the house of Beaumont House. And because she passed, I refused to recast it to do another series. And I should have, because it would have solidified me as an actress. But I'm a stubborn broad, and I loved Joan, and I didn't think anybody could take her place.
Rochelle, you played in another series, do you remember?
Yeah, you're talking about the Desmonds now.
Yeah.
My God, yeah, well, I actually got to name all of my characters. I said, I don't like that name, I'll be Rochelle. Okay, I'll be Gloria. So I wrote the song, Land of Hope and Gloria. So everything has a reason, and I'm the kind of person who likes to break down barriers. If whatever the barriers are, break them, because that's what we're about in show business. You know, we're about making things better for other artists and the ones that come after me. I'm 70 years old now. The ones who come after me, what I try to tell kids is read the contract. Read the contract before you sign it. So unlike the 3 Degrees, who never get royalties and haven't since the 80s, they won't get screwed. That's one of my things in life.
You were in Brookside too, weren't you?
We did 2 episodes of that, and that was my first screen kiss.
Susan Robinson, I think.
That's my married name is Robinson.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, make it an S something. Can't be Sheila, so it better be Susan. Susan Robinson. She's getting to know me now.
I'm having a lovely time listening to this. It's like an audience
win. I know. Jeez, I'm doing that soon. Anyway.
You did Always at the Victoria Palace, didn't you? Mm-hmm. That sort of kicked off your sort of musical career in a way, didn't it?
Definitely did. Yeah. And at the same time, Mark Clements came to me and said, we're putting together a musical called Soul Train. When we get it together, we want you to be part of it. I said, no problem. And that was the second one that ran for like 2 or 3 years. It started at the Victoria Palace. Mm. And then we toured it with Danny John Jules, Jason Pennycook, who's now in Hamilton. On all of us, we're still together. We still stay in touch. Melanie Marshall, Gerard. It's really nice because it was 11 of us and we were an all black cast. And the choreography Stephen Meir did, it was just brilliantly done.
Thoroughly Modern Millie, you did Hot Flush, Fame, Oh What a Night. You've done such a good cross-section, haven't you?
I know, but all anybody wants to ever talk about is when will I see you again? So, what you gonna do?
You, Sheila Ferguson, were on the first blankety-blank that Les Dawson ever did.
I know.
He was great, wasn't he?
I know, and you know, between him and Bob Monkhouse, I learned a lot about light entertainment. Bob Monkhouse was such a legend. I watched him at a private function. I was in the audience. And I go in with the sound crew because I don't like crowds. And I go in with the crew. And he went up and he went and found out who it was about, who was the head person. And he made his humor around that person. And his jokes, and he wrote, he was a brilliant, brilliant entertainer. The banter we used to have together was something that we, like Bobby and I, we kind of developed it, if you know what I mean. And that comes from being unselfish and shutting up and giving over to the other person. And like Bob Monkhouse said, I said, see, there was a question I got wrong, and he made a joke, and I said, it's because I'm black. He said, no, it's because you're an idiot. You know what I mean? So it was just like, so we kept that going. I said the black thing. He said, no, idiot. But in those days also, you could get away with different humor. Mm. Now, everything's so politically correct. Mm. You couldn't do a Mel Brooks film now. No. Blazing Saddles would never have gotten to the screen, nor would Young Frankenstein or the producers. You just, poor Gene Wilder would have had no career, you know. Yeah. So I'm really hoping people come to their senses and let comedians be funny again.
Yeah, Warren Mitchell would never get away with what he used to, would he?
Tell me about it. Was that the Sanford and Son guy here?
Yeah.
Steptoe.
Oh, no, not Steptoe. No, it was...
Till Death Do Us Part.
Warren Mitchell was in it.
Oh, God. Oh, yes, of course, he'd never get rid of it.
No, no.
He's passed now. Yeah.
You write cookbooks as well, Sheila, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. It's a classic, soul food, classic cuisine of the American South, which traces the recipes back to the origins of Africa or the Creole food or the Cajun food. And it sort of took a life onto its own. People always used to rave about my cooking. And Michael Parkinson was my next door neighbor. They would be my dinner guests, and they would always be raving about my food. This is only the food I grew up on. So I thought, well, let me put the recipes down. And then I started looking up the history of them and anecdoted each recipe with a family history about the slave quarters and how our love for hot foods became apparent because they fed the slaves in the coffers Malaguena peppers to keep from dying because they would be losing stock. So everything kind of started making sense. The seeds of the watermelon came over to the Americas in the pockets of slaves. And the first slaves were chosen because of their knowledge in the cultivation of rice, not because of their heavy backs. I love history. Mm. And because of history, I incorporated that in the book, which made it more of a classic. Everybody in England wants to pigeonhole things, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be pigeonholed, so I do different stuff. And it might not always be top 10 successful in literary terms, but it's now a classic in every library in America and in schools. So it means more to me for that to be right than to have money in the bank from it being whatever, you know what I mean?
I'm a celebrity, looking back in hindsight, glad you did it?
I'm glad I did it because I did it when they were making the template. And back in the days when Yvonne Alexander first rode by Thoroughly Modern Millie and kept seeing my posters, I got to get her a proper black celebrity. Now it's gone to the fact where they know the fears of the audience and they just play on those snakes and bugs and things. And I think the quality of TV, thank God Bodyguard came out because that's turned things around. Yeah. The quality of TV has gone. And I think it will now take a turn for the better.
Mm-hmm. I love the Real Marigold Hotel. And I was very jealous because this guy took you out on a date. I remember sitting indoors and saying, God, I wish that was me.
Oh, you're talking about the Indian chap.
Yeah.
Well, then there was Iceland, and it was the Icelandic chap. And we're still in touch, and he's coming over.
Is he?
And I've just come back from Argentina, and I've got an Argentina guy coming over. And I'm just done Russia, and believe me, ain't no Russian coming to my house ever. No way. Nah. That was my limit of dates.
Those sort of programs, I think now they do them with well-known people in. I think they're fantastic, really, because it's nice to see pros in reality shows as against amateurs,
and
if you like.
And older people, too.
Yeah.
And I think there's a much bigger market now for older people in reality shows because we give good TV.
You do.
And we know how to self-edit. I know how to give them their sound bites and shut up. Mm. And they love, let's go to Sheila's room, it'll be quick. You know, so if they're going to come to me when I'm brushing my teeth in the morning, they're gonna get an attitude, first of all. And then they're going to get their sound bite and say, that's it. Oh, she shut up. I said, yep, that's it. You know, so it saves time. They work you very hard. It's an 18-hour day. Mm. So it's edited down very well. Let's put it that way.
I must say, you look terrific, and you're all keyed up for this pantomime.
Yeah, well, look who I'm working with. I'm working with some great people. There's a great vibe backstage at the moment, and this is the first time we're meeting. Mm. There's laughter, there's humor, there's everybody giving over to everyone else. There's none of that one-upmanship, which is what I don't like about certain casts in shows. I can't handle that, so I just slam my door and stay to myself. But with this show, I think we are going to have a lot of laughs backstage. Bobby and I go way, way back to Rock with Laughter. And Joe is lovely. Everybody is so lovely. And I think already there's a calmness that everybody's going to have a good time.
Spirit of the Bells, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm the spirit of the bells. I don't get to interact a lot with people, maybe because I'm in my own world. So Bobby's always going on about the buzz he gets and this, that, and the other, and because he can ad-lib and stuff. I can't do that. So, but what I do get is what I miss from the 70s. In the 70s, before you went on stage, you would hear the audience rumbling and you would feel the pulse and the band would be warming up and you could feel the anticipation of the audience when they first saw you walk out in those costumes. Now I walk into a stage and I see a sea of phones and cameras. I don't get the same buzz, but with Panto, I can see the eyes of the children. That's where I get my buzz, because they know I'm the fairy and I'm their friend, and they know I'm going to help the lady win, help her win the day. Or is it Dick supposed to win? Whoever. Either way, you're going to get some Dick.
Oh, I like it. You don't want to retire and move to India, do you?
No. Actually, I've sold in Mallorca, and I've been here. I've just taken possession of my new home here.
Wonderful.
So I'm now living in Kent, and nowhere near unpacked. But it's been interesting going to Russia and Argentina, trying to find cold clothes for this and hot clothes for that. And it's going to take a while. It's hard finding staff.
When those people like you all go to India, celebs, and not many, if any, will sort of go and live there, do you think, or...?
I don't know. I know several have gone back for operations on their knees and things. But I do think, and I said it at the end, whether they put it in or not, everybody other than me is partnered. There's nobody single. So Lionel Blair, Amanda Barry, they have people who they have family looking after them. I live alone, so I am the only one who could conceivably move anywhere I wanted to if I fell in love. So that's what gives me a kind of edge, if you know what I mean.
Move to the Isle of Wight.
Well, I might be a little conspicuous.
Sheila, it's always a real thrill and pleasure to talk to you.
And to you.
For several...
Somebody who finally does their homework.
Oh, well, thank you.
That is nice, isn't it?
And...
Okay, I'm going to turn it over to my lady.
What a luck about you. I was going to say, I don't have to do very much because you've got a great personality and it comes over.
Oh, thank you. That's really sweet.
So you're here from December the 15th to January the 6th playing Spirit of the Bells.
Spirit of the Bells. Now I know my name. I thought it was Fairy Bow Bells until I got here.
Thanks a lot and good luck in the future.
Thank you.
Suzanne Shaw actually sat in on that interview and she's on next.
Who is it?
Who's who?
Him.
Who?
John Amam.
John Amam. John Amam.
John Amam.
John Ananam.
And never mind that. Hey, rock on, Johnny.
Hey, see you soon, Johnny, baby.
John Annam meets on Isle of Wight Radio.
Well, a few minutes ago, I spoke to Sheila Ferguson, and now I've been joined by Alice. A very important role in Dick Whittington, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is. I'm really, really excited about playing Alice, because I've always... pretty much been Cinders in most of the pantos that I've done. I think this is my 11th panto. Occasionally a Jasmine and a Genie, but yeah, very much more Cinderella. So Alice is a part that I've, like, if it was anything else, I would love to play Alice. I think she's got a little bit more about her. She's not so sweet, and she's got a bit of oomph, and, you know, she gets a little bit of... you know, tongue-in-cheek lines. So, yeah, I'm really excited.
Ought to say, of course, Suzanne Shaw, welcome back to John Hannah Meets, because, well, when we saw each other just now, you said to me, I know you, and I said, well, I know you.
Yeah, I know. I think it's doing the rounds in the theatres over the last 20 years that, you know, you get to know people, but you meet lots of people as well. So, you know, I've seen a lot of familiar faces today, and I've not been to Southampton since probably about 9 years ago when I did Rocky Horror Show. It was the last time I performed at Southampton. So it's so good to be back here, and with it being refurbished as well. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Looking forward to the new dressing rooms.
Talking about Rocky Horror, I remember coming here to see it, and I was on my own, and I was sat in the circle, and there were all these people all dressed up, and I thought, for 1 minute, I thought, what am I doing here, you know?
But I know. I think if it's the first visit to go to see Rocky Horror Show, you kind of are taken back to exactly what it's all about. When I started it, Chris Luskin, my director, said, we're going to invite some of the hardcore fans to the rehearsals, so you got a little bit of a, you just know what you're about to get, because it is all about audience participation. I mean, you think Panto is, but nothing like Rocky Horror Show.
I know.
And so they came and they started shouting things out in between our lines, and we thought, oh God, I didn't expect that. But there's nothing like that very first performance when you don't have 10 people in the room, you have 2,000 people shouting the same thing out. And I think I just started getting the nervous giggles and rice being thrown out and water pistols on stage. I was like, oh my God, I've got 2 years of doing this on tour. What's going to happen?
I know when I saw that there's sort of a scene behind a screen, isn't there?
Yes.
And when I saw that, I thought, God, you know.
Yeah, it is.
Again, what am I doing here, you know?
Yeah, well, I can absolutely. I mean, again, I think that every day I was on stage, what is my life about? I'm making out with a transvestite.
Yes.
Not every day you say that sentence.
You were about 12 when you did your first telly, weren't you?
Yes, 12 years old in a programme called Elidor, which was the very first CBBC children's programme with special effects. And I remember reading the book at school just before I'd got into the show, famous Alan Garner book. Yeah, it was great, my introduction to TV.
Suzanne, was that sort of going to be the direction when you were 12? Is that what you wanted to do?
I started dancing at 2 years old, ballet. Yeah, literally. My mum said as soon as I was out of nappies, that was it. I was on stage. And I remember 3, 4 saying, I want to be in films. I want to be in Hollywood. I mean, it's still yet to make it there. But it was always, I'd never thought, it never even crossed my mind to train into something different or do something different. It was theatre, TV, the singing, dancing, acting, all of that. It was a burning fire in my belly that I could never give up.
You did Holby early on, didn't you?
I did, just before I got into Hearsay, actually. Yeah. Playing the part, I think I was 17, 18 at the time, playing the part of a 15-year-old. And I remember just turning up at the studios. It was a small cameo. And actually now I'd love, because it's only down the road from me where they film, I would love a regular in Holby. It's one of the things that I'd really enjoy to do now.
You did the Pop Stars sort of TV thing, which changed your life, didn't it, really?
Yeah. I think it changed my life, but also changed the state of TV. I think, you know, it was the very first music reality show, and because of the success of it, you know, it became a big machine and a big TV institution now, and you know, it does well, and I think it's something brilliant about finding, you know, British talent, great talent, and giving people a chance who wouldn't ordinarily know how to get through the door if that reality TV hadn't opened it for anybody out there. So I think, you know, it's nice to see that, you know, you could be a cleaner but still become a pop star the day after. But I do think, you know, if I'm honest, I'm not sure whether it's had its time now, and I think times are changing. Like, light entertainment is, there's such a need for it. Good old sitcoms, dramas, you know, I think because of Netflix and Amazon, a lot more of those are coming through now, which is nice to see.
You never expected to be in a group to sell well over 1 million singles,
no,
did you?
No, I remember being in that audition room and Nigel Lithgow saying, 5 people are going to be living in a house, they will get £1 million record deal, you will be recording your album all over the world, you will tour the country, and I sat there thinking, oh my God, the 5 people are going to have such a great time. Oh, that's awesome for them. Never in a million years I thought that I'd be one of those people. Because at the time, I was auditioning for Coronation Street and a Robson Green drama, and for Godspell, and I was down to the finals in all three.
Wow.
And then I ended up in Hearsay. It was mad. Did not expect that curveball at all.
So looking back, it was another sort of stepping stone for you, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, you know, back in the day, coming from kind of stage school, it was always a case you audition for everything because, you know, it's very few far between become famous now. You become known for what they do. I mean, it's very different now. It's so easy to be famous. So you would go up for everything. If it's not theatre, it would be TV. You had to have a sense of being an all-rounder to be able to have the biggest chance to get into something that you'd like to do.
You were in Summer Holiday, weren't you? The tour of Summer Holiday.
Yeah, I did.
Great songs, aren't they?
Yeah, great songs. A great, you know, musical from a movie. Real feel-good. Toured that. That was the first job out of Hearsay. You know, there was lots of things when you came out of pop bands. A lot of thing people wanted to do was record a solo album and become a solo artist. It was never an ambition of mine. I loved being part of a group. I had a great experience, but I kind of fell into Hearsay by an accident rather than an actual career choice. And I think as soon as Hearsay was over, I wanted to go back to my musical roots and my acting roots. And so the first job that I was offered was Summer Holiday. So I jumped at the chance to it and went on the road. And yeah, really found my thing again, my love, the life, and it wasn't being a puppet on a string.
You've done Shout, and you also played Geraldine in a character in a brand new play, didn't you?
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness, at the Arts Theatre in London. Yeah. Do you know what's really nice about doing a brand new material is you get to create that character. There's no way of people saying, well, can you do it a little bit like the previous person? And we quite liked it how that other person did it. You get to be the person that they say, can you play it how Suzanne Shaw played it? So it's nice to be able to really create a role to yourself and workshop it and play around with it.
Suzanne, it's great to meet you again because we've met once or twice
during
your career.
Yeah.
And I didn't know I was chatting to you today, so it's a bonus.
Yeah.
So playing Alice, Dick Whittington, December 15th to January the 6th at the Mayflower Southampton.
Can't wait.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's great. He's got a swell personality. He meets and greets the stars with such amenity. Good enough to make you coming out of the street. John Hannemay. That's right.
You've been listening to John Hannemeats, courtesy of Isle of Wight Radio. Don't forget to look at my website, johnhannam.com, for news of more interviews and how you might purchase my books. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye for now.